Buddy Murphy has a breakout performance on SmackDown, and Daniel Bryan promises Roman Reigns he knows who the culprit is. Your full SmackDown Live review starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. It is August 14th, 2019. SmackDown Live is in the books. And WWE programming is in the books for the SummerSlam season of 2019. And it was, I would say, overall a success for WWE. A very good weekend. And it was one of the more memorable SummerSlams in quite a while. It focused a lot on wrestling, less on terrible comedy, and more on the in-ring product. And that's where you tell your stories. Did I agree with everything this week? Absolutely not. But all things considered, this was a very successful, I believe a properly booked, for the most part, week for WWE in setting the template going into the fall season, in which we will see Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series, TLC, and then the Rumble, and then boom, we're off into WrestleMania season. So I always say this every year, and I stick by my guns, that SummerSlam can and has had in the past seeds that have been planted all the way to WrestleMania. When you look back at Daniel Bryan's story leading into WrestleMania 30, that happened for Daniel Bryan and Triple H when Triple H screwed him at SummerSlam, and Daniel Bryan made the long journey all the way to WrestleMania 30. So it has happened. Will it happen this year when we get to WrestleMania? Will we look back and say, wow, the seeds were planted at SummerSlam? All that time ago. It's possible. It doesn't happen every year, but my point is that it has happened and really should happen. If you know what WrestleMania is going to be this year, at least for your top three matches, why not plant just subtle seeds now? So, but again, that's not every year, and you could look back at many WrestleManias and say, hey, SummerSlam had nothing to do with how we got here, and there were no seeds planted, no nuggets, no Easter eggs, nothing. So just something to keep an eye out for. But we're on to SmackDown Live here, and I really thought this was a good show. I don't know if I'm just in a good mood this week or what, or if the WWE product is just markedly better this week and focused on simple stories and not overtelling and overproducing things and just easy-to-follow television, compelling television, and really, right now, I think the biggest story coming out of SmackDown Live is not Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon's story that continues to some people's peril. It's not the Samoa Joe, Kevin Owens booking. It's really the story of Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy is the story coming out of SmackDown Live this week. Bet you didn't see that one coming. Yes, we knew the match was going to happen. But I don't think anybody believed that Buddy Murphy and Roman Reigns would have that kind of chemistry and put on that quality, top quality of a match. That was pay-per-view quality. I mean, it was a 4 out of 5 star match. It was just so good. And credit goes to Roman Reigns, too, who played his part. I mean, as much as I am not a fan of the babyface Roman Reigns character, he can go with the best of them. He's physical. He, of course, he looks the part. He mesmerizes Vince McMahon. We all know why, right? So, but the point is that Buddy Murphy, too, that's who the biggest beneficiary of this match was. Hands down, Buddy Murphy was the man last night. And the match had me believing. The match actually made me, who's been watching wrestling for almost 25 years, say, oh my God, he's going to beat Roman. I think the moment that I believed it could happen is when Roman went for the spear and Buddy Murphy hit him with a couple of knees and you said, oh my God, this could be it. And when Buddy hit his finish and Roman just kicked out, the kick out of that that count was perfect by Roman Reigns. They just had a chemistry that worked and worked very, very well. I mean, some guys don't gel even if they're both super athletic. There are times when styles clash, and no pun intended, this was not one of them. This was a peanut butter and jelly scenario. I would really be surprised if these two don't cross paths again or get into a semi-long-term program at some point in the next 365 days next year, probably a better way to say it. I could see this turning into something. The issue is that since Buddy Murphy has endeared himself to fans and opened the eyes of fans who have maybe never even seen him in prime time, he is now instantly a babyface because he has shown the crowd that he can go. He has endeared himself to the unknown fans. He may be booked in a heel role because he's simply going against Roman Reigns, who is the forever babyface of Vince McMahon. But moving forward, Buddy Murphy, I think, could use this as a launching pad for his career. It was that big of a performance. And when you do it on the stage against Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns giving Buddy Murphy his nod of approval. Now, whether or not that was part of the script, if you will, I don't know. But if it was, it was a good idea. If it wasn't, that's great instincts by Roman Reigns to essentially give the guy his due, his nod of approval. Like, hey, man, you took me to the limit. And I understand that I've been critical of everybody taking everybody to the limit. I get it. I don't like it, though. I mean, in general, I don't. Because then you're on a level playing field, which is nonsensical when you're in any kind of sports environment, much less when you're trying to present a fictional, simulated sport environment. You don't need a landscape. You need a hierarchy, right? I'm tired of the narrative that no matter who faces who, the loser is the one who took the winner to the limit. No, it doesn't always have to be that way. It's nonsensical because then it's anybody can beat anybody in any given day, which I don't like. I do not like that because then when you have underdogs beat the favorites, it's not a surprise because it happens so often or they become within an eyelash of it happening. It just it takes the believability out of it. With that said, this week with Buddy Murphy, that was one in which you said, oh, well, they will probably have a nice match. And, you know, Buddy might have a couple of hope spots, but ultimately it's going to be a semi-squash to just put over Roman Reigns. Not the case. Not the case. We got a much different match, a much longer match, a much more dramatic match than I think anybody ever expected from these two. This put Buddy Murphy on the effing map. It did. It instantly created, put credibility in him in the eyes of fans. It did so much. It put him a mile ahead from when that bell first rang. Because everybody believed, from the week before, when Buddy Murphy was basically bullied by Roman Reigns in the locker room, and having him just pin him up against a locker like he's the big tough guy in the football team that's picking on, you know, the younger guy that's not as big as he is. That's what it came off as Buddy Murphy's kind of just that annoying guy in the football team that, you know, the big alpha male, the leader on the team, gets to, you know, just kind of rough around when he wants to. It felt like that dynamic in a high school locker room. But from there to get to where Buddy Murphy was at the end of SmackDown Live last night, light years. It was such an eye-opening match for me, who has not followed Buddy Murphy very closely, admittedly. I wish I did and had before that. I understand that, you know, look, you guys know, bottom line is, it's not that I'm not a hardcore fan or that, you don't want to watch it, you're just into the main product. Well, no, I just simply don't have the time to do it. I simply don't have the time to watch NXT UK, NXT Evolve. I just don't. I wish I did, which would probably make me even more invested in some of these up-and-coming call-ups. But for what it's worth, speaking from a guy that is right now only watching the main roster product, SmackDown, Raw, pay-per-views, it was a guy that you said, wow, like, I can't wait to see him next week. Buddy Murphy's a guy that people are going, you know, wow, that's going to be good to see him next week. Now, what they need to do is capitalize on this buzz right now quickly, because people have short memories. You need to capitalize on this and do it immediately, like next week. That's how soon. I'm not saying give him world title shot. I'm not saying, you know, make him into some kind of, you know, star that immediately gets shot to the top. I'm saying put him in a relevant program immediately. Don't wait. Things cool off quick. In this gotta have it now, short term, what have you done for me lately society, you need to do something and do it fast to capitalize on this awesome opportunity for Buddy Murphy. How do you do that? First of all, give him a microphone. Let him talk. Give him depth to his character. You've already established that he can go inside the ring. That much is clear now. And he did it with the, quote, top dog, the big dog, which I still feel is a very forced nickname for Roman Reigns, because Vince McMahon just is incessant about everybody having silly nicknames. So apparently the big dog is what Roman Reigns is. It just still feels forced after years of saying it. It just still doesn't feel right. And I'll leave it at that. But you did it against the top guy in the company. Regardless of who's champion, Roman Reigns is still viewed as the top guy. Let's be totally honest here. In the eyes of Vince McMahon, we all know the truth of Vince McMahon, and that is Roman Reigns is still the top guy. So you did it against him on SmackDown Live in a match that nobody expected to be that good. I don't even think they expected it to be that good. And when I say they, Buddy and Roman, give him the next piece of it, which is his promo, his character. Who is he? Why is he here? What does he need? What's his mission statement? That's where you need to go with this. Because I really believe, I said this at the top of the show, Buddy Murphy is not going to get booed right now, because he just proved that he can go in an instant in a match that was just pay-per-view quality out of nowhere. It was great. So now capitalize, move it forward. Don't shoot him to the top. Just keep it rolling. Keep the ball moving. Promos. Maybe even if he's not in a match, put him on a backstage promo. I love the sit-down interviews, or maybe giving us a backstory on Buddy Murphy, you know, maybe his history, anything to just keep it going. The last thing you want to do next week on SmackDown Live is have Buddy Murphy in either short segment or not there, because, oh, well, we got to worry about Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. We got to worry about Roman Reigns and the Mystery Attacker. No. Right now, your focus, because this does not happen often, is to continue the momentum with Buddy Murphy. Can anybody name the last time this happened? I'm sure it's happened before, but tell me the last time that a relatively new star on the main roster came up, had a match with a long time established top guy, and made a name for himself immediately. Tell me. I don't know. I mean, Kevin Owens might be, but he had his first match against John Cena at the Elimination Chamber and won as the NXT champion. Kevin Owens immediately felt like he belonged. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind. But I don't remember the last time that a guy that was really almost unknown to most, again, if you follow NXT and all that, I understand that I know who he is. Of course I do. But you got to understand, the casual fan probably had no idea who Buddy Murphy was until he was mentioned by Kevin Owens when he had his rant interview against Shane McMahon, and then the fact that Roman Reigns just barged in the locker room and accused Buddy Murphy of, you know who it is, or it's not you, you tell me, and all that stuff, that Buddy Murphy was just instantly injected into the storyline of the whodunit against Roman Reigns, that the casual fan probably didn't know who Buddy Murphy was. So this guy bursts onto the scene, and he instantly becomes relevant and has one of the best matches on SmackDown Live in probably over a year or more. You need to keep this going. This is something special. This is something special. Move forward with it. I'm not saying he's the second coming of Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm not saying he's the second coming of The Rock. Let's all take a breath on that. I'm not saying it's that. Oh my God, it was one match on one night. My point is, this is something that does not happen often. And when it does, you cannot drop the ball on it. This is what causes a buzz on social media, which it already has. It was one of the top trending things on Twitter over the last 24 hours, not just in WWE, but in general on Twitter, about Buddy Murphy's match with Roman Reigns, his breakout performance. That is something that is special. And So I just believe that while it's not something that should be overstated, it's something that should not be understated either. And so that's my point on this whole deal. And I really wish the best of Buddy Murphy. Now we just need to get a personality behind it. Come back with a scathing promo. He's in good shape. He's a pretty solid big guy. Yeah, he's about 5 inches shorter than Roman Reigns, because height is everything to Vince. So, look, I'm fine with them moving forward. I don't want to see him become world champion, but build him. This is not about shooting him to the top. This is about building a foundation for Buddy Murphy to build off of and, you know, take that next step. Build a foundation. Do this right. I would say that if you put him in a major program, make it for a mid-tier belt right now. I mean, even I wouldn't do that at this point. I wouldn't even put him in the any kind of championship picture at this point. It should just be Buddy Murphy in some kind of personal issue with somebody for a non-title at this point. You don't want the Roman Reigns formula of just shooting him to the top and the fans resenting you. So that's my thoughts, those are my thoughts, on Buddy Murphy on SmackDown Live. It was super enjoyable. It got me caught up in the moment. I can't remember the last time that happened, as far as, especially on a TV match, maybe because it was so unexpected. And yes, you could say, well, SmackDown Live and Raw, you don't expect, you know, top quality matches and matches to really engage you. It's more of just, you know, steps to get you to the pay-per-view, where that's when you'll get invested in the match. So you could argue, well, the bar at SmackDown and Raw is set lower. So when you exceed that bar for emotional investment in a match, it's not as exciting. I would argue that, yeah, he exceeded expectations, but he blew away the expectations. It wasn't just as if, you know, he, you know, just barely exceeded them. He blew them out of the water, to the point where even if you put this on a pay-per-view, you would say this could be the match of the night. That's how good it was. It had me believing. It had me, like, I was clenching my phone as I was watching this. I actually, like, said out loud, like, oh my God. Like, and it wasn't something I thought about. It's just how I naturally reacted. That's professional wrestling. That's what keeps you coming back as a fan. These moments. That kind of wrestling. And it doesn't need to be the flip-flop stuff that Ricochet does, which, again, amazing athlete, but that doesn't necessarily automatically generate emotional investment just because you're a crazy good athlete and in amazing shape and can do things that 99% of humans on this earth can't do. Does not mean you automatically can create emotional investment in a match. It gives you a more of a moveset to work with and can certainly, you know, keep the crowd engaged and going, holy, you know what, and do all that kind of chants. But does it really make you engaged and care about who's winning this match? Maybe, maybe not. If you're just in the match to watch a spot fest, and you're just wondering, oh, I can't wait to see what crazy move this person does, then you're not emotionally invested in the match. You're invested in just the spots. That's a superficial investment. Investing in the spots of a match is superficial, and it does not generate, in general, long-term interest. Personal issues and good storytelling in the ring, which is, again, unfortunately, in today's 2019 presentation of wrestling, is often too much invested in the spots and the crazy reversals and the 480 flips, which is fun to watch. But the key is, does it create emotional investment instead of just spot, spot, spot? You know, I'm going to beat on you for a while. You beat on me for a while. Spot, spot, spot. I'm going to do something crazy, but I'm not going to sell it. Spot, 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 spot. High spot. Cool reversal. Finish. False finish. False finish. False finish. Cool spot. Finish. I mean, that's kind of the equation for the 2019 version of professional wrestling. So hats off to Roman. Hats off to Buddy. Let's continue on with this. I just was so, you know, enthralled with this match, and hats off to both guys. I'm giving Buddy Murphy a lot of credit, but again, the same amount of credit should go to Roman Reigns, who played his part very well. And it really showed that, you know, he certainly has come a long way from just being the muscle of the Shield. And as much as I'm still not a fan of the Roman Reigns babyface character, he can certainly wrestle. He can certainly get physical. He put a very high amount of effort into this match, and hats off to both guys. So how about that for a a beginning of the WWE podcast, right? Okay, well, again, guys, I know there's a super long intro, 20 minutes, but welcome to the WWE podcast. This show is four times a week. This week, it's only three times a week. I'm actually, unfortunately, going to be skipping my co-host version or co-host episode of this week because of my travels. You guys know I'm in California. I'm in San Diego for work. So I do not have a co-host scheduled for tomorrow because it's absolutely impossible for me to get somebody. I mean, I'm going to be, 40,000 feet in the air and doing an hour layover. I mean, I'm going to be dead to the world. So it's going to be resuming. Your regularly scheduled programming will resume on Sunday. And that may be with a co-host, but it may be my wrestling nostalgia. I'm trying to see if my co-host was good enough to join me on Sunday, but if not, it'll still be me, and then we're going to go right back to our normal schedule of Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, starting this coming week. So it's only a one-show sacrifice for me being 2,300 miles away from my home right now. It's nuts. So, but again, thank you for joining me, and you can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast, or go to my website at WWEPodcast.com, and all of my shows are there. New articles are going up multiple times a week. I got some awesome contributions there from several very talented writers. And you guys can support the show in a very free and effective way by going to the Support the Show tab. It's that right at the top of the page on the homepage, and then click on the Amazon banner. It's a banner right in the middle of the page. When you click Support the Show and just do your shopping as normal on Amazon, you just start with the WWE Podcast, and any shopping you do will kick back a very small commission to the show. And it's a really nice way of saying thank you, and I do thank you back for those of you who have done it. It is much appreciated. You can also, if for another free way to support the show, just write a quick review, a 5-star rating and review. That's it. So I don't want to plug too much, but let's move on, because you're here to listen to SmackDown Live, right? So, and my thoughts. All right, so let's start really at the top of the show when Kevin Owens came out and basically said that he was moving on from Shane McMahon and that he is now focusing on the King of the Ring. That incensed Shane McMahon, who came out and fined Kevin Owens $100,000 for attacking an official in Elias. And Kevin Owens loses his mind and says that he has a family, and Shane McMahon doesn't reconsider. So, and one thing I don't understand about this, Elias was, number one, not an official. He was an enforcer. So what's the definition of that? We don't know. It's not an official, because Elias, as an enforcer, isn't the official of the match. He's like a wrestler playing an official. It's a security guard. It's not really a cop, right? So, Kevin Owens could argue that Elias is under contract to WWE as a performer, as a wrestler. And even if he was appointed for the night as an official or a special enforcer, that doesn't make him an enforcer in the WWE or a WWE official under contract. Because that's not what his contract reads. He's a wrestler. So Kevin Owens could lean on that, and maybe they will, or they probably won't. Elias basically is not under contract to WWE as an official. So to say that he attacked an official is actually incorrect. If he attacked a referee for doing a bad job, and we've seen it before, and we've seen fines being handed down, that's not the case here. So I'm not understanding how Kevin Owens is not seeing this as again, in the storyline sense. But nonetheless, we got that, and it looks like the continuation of Shane McMahon and versus Kevin Owens is continuing, for better or worse. And throughout the night, we had Kevin Owens going to Shane McMahon and, asking to reconsider. And Shane McMahon does not. So we ended up getting a match of Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens. Elias comes out to the ring, and he's going to serve again as a special enforcer. It ended up with Kevin Owens being distracted by Elias to have an extremely quick count pulled on Kevin Owens, with Samoa Joe getting the win. Now, Elias, I don't understand the direction of Elias here. I'm not following it. Elias is just kind of floating out there. He's still this wannabe performer, or wannabe musical performer. At the same time, he sometimes also just plays a normal wrestler, and when convenient, is the lackey for Shane McMahon. There's no direction for Elias. He's very all over the place. So he's a heel, and he has the charisma, right? But there's no direction for Elias whatsoever. No real concrete understanding of what his character is after. So, nonetheless, though, I mean, it still got good heat on Shane and Elias. It made me angry at Shane and Elias. It made me want to see Kevin Owens beat the hell out of them again. And that's a good thing. So, mission accomplished there. I'm fine with it because it made me ultimately feel the way that that story presented to me was supposed to make me feel. So, that's ultimately what they're going for, and they got it, as much as the logic may not be there at times. So I'm fine with it, and Samoa Joe gets a win, even though it was tainted as hell. So Samoa Joe is, again, and I mentioned this last night in the Raw review, is established, reestablished, and reaffirmed as a heel. As much as we all thought that it was a babyface turn for Samoa Joe after showing compassion for Reigns, and then Reigns subsequently apologizing to Joe very authentically, this was not a babyface turn for Samoa Joe. So we got that very reestablished to us. All right. Then we got, after that segment, a Ember Moon and Charlotte match, and it ended up with Charlotte getting the win very decisively with the figure four, or the figure eight, via submission, and Ember Moon taps out. Ember Moon, and I know what they're trying to do, you don't just want the same people in the same spot at the top. You need to create new stars. Understand that. Ember Moon really came out of nowhere, who was just sitting in the back reading books on storage crates when Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville came up to her at one point. It's just, you know, you're in your dream job. You're a top athlete. And you're sitting backstage not watching the show and just reading books. And then a month later, you're in a championship match. You lose it. And then you lose to Charlotte here. Why is Ember Moon even, like, I mean, why is she in championship matches number one? I mean, yeah, Bayley chose her, but it made no sense because she hasn't done anything. Ember Moon is not on a roll whatsoever. Ember Moon is spiraling down quickly. And Charlotte, I'm surprised, did not mention the Trish Stratus victory. I'm surprised. I thought she would gloat and gloat and gloat, and she hasn't. I'm sure we'll get there. But you figured that she would have just owned that win and just poured salt into the wound, and she didn't. It was just a matter-of-fact win to just reaffirm where the pecking order is of the women in WWE SmackDown on that roster anyway. Okay. After that, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, they're shown backstage walking through the arena hallways. And we get the 412th video package looking at the mysterious attacks on Roman Reigns in recent weeks. How many times are they going to do this? All right, I'm not going to vent about that. You guys know how I feel. It's not even overkill. It's like killing the overkill, if that's possible. So I know I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but the end of the show saw Roman Reigns finally confronting Daniel Bryan, because that's just how this whole storyline is being presented now. There's just enough time. There's like that 2-minute window after the final match on SmackDown Live ends to stick in a Roman Reigns progression of this storyline. That's just how it happens now. I don't know why, but It's just amazing. So he confronts Rowan and Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan, who's kind of gone off the deep end a little bit, and I'll talk about that in a minute, has told Roman that it wasn't us, but next week I'll tell you who it is. So let me just say this, number one. Number one, I still believe that it is Daniel Bryan who's behind this, because Daniel Bryan has been built up to be believed that he is, and if he's not, then that would have wasted all of our time. So Daniel Bryan will present some footage. I'm sure that he'll show video proof or indisputable proof that it's not him. And maybe, you know, it'll divert Roman's attention and Daniel Bryan will attack him from behind. And then we'll get the real explanation after Roman Reigns is down and beaten by Rowan and Daniel Bryan from behind of why he did what he did. And I just believe it has to be Bryan, because not only does that make total sense and it would be a waste of everyone's time, colossal waste, but it also is being told to us through Daniel Bryan's body language. Daniel Bryan has morphed from the obnoxious vegan into this psychopathic, starting to lose it on edge, little bit of the Joker in him from Dark Knight type of character. There was a little bit of the Joker there, if anybody noticed. It just it resonated with me, and that's not a bad thing. Hell, Heath Ledger being the Joker was one of the most legendary performances of all time. But I got that feeling from Daniel Bryan, and maybe he was a little bit inspired from it too, and that's fine. Maybe that was totally unintentional, and maybe no one else agrees with me or sees it, but I did. And that's not a bad thing, because, again, that's just an amazing performance from Heath Ledger. But Daniel Bryan had a little bit of that in him, that on-edge kind of psychopathic look in his eye that was very believable. He was all in on that. And just the way he looks at people and gets in their face, and it's like he's about to snap, but he's got that quiet anger. Like, he's very unsteady, unstable. It's good stuff right now by Daniel Bryan. It's a definitive character change and shift from him being the vegan, planet-loving, tree-hugging, holier-than-thou vegan that he has been presented as over the last few months. And then won the tag team titles, wasn't given any mic time, and then drops the tag titles, which I still believe was the wrong thing to do. But they are telling a long-term story here, and if you're going to do that, you need to have a shift in Daniel Bryan's character. And we saw that very strikingly this past week on SmackDown Live. Just his body language, the way he turns his head, his eyes that are just darting through people. It's very believable. It's very uneasy and unsettling. That's a good thing. So I love where Daniel Bryan's character is headed right now. And, you know, rumor had it that they didn't want to rush to Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. They're going to let this thing play out. I'm a fan of it. It's very surprising they didn't have Roman Reigns on the SummerSlam card, considering he's their top guy. But if for the storyline's sake, they must have said, hey, this is a storyline that's worth fleshing out than just hot-shotting this match. So when they weighed their pros and cons, clearly the pros of waiting and telling a full-fleshed-out story that they're trying to tell outweighed the hot-shotting of just getting Roman Reigns on the card and rushing to the match. Thank you. That's how you should do things. You know, everybody doesn't have to be on every card like it's, you know, a sixth grade participation award for just, hey, attaboy, good, you know, good try. You know, you get something for trying. I don't like that crap. So, you know, although WrestleMania is that every single year and should be the complete opposite considering it's their biggest show and the Super Bowl of their profession. You know, at the Super Bowl, you don't see every team that lost during the year just show up and go, oh, gosh, you know, gee golly, thanks for including us. You know, thanks so much. Even though we went 0-16 this year in the season, you know, it makes me feel good that I'm included. It's stupid. It's stupid, and it takes away from the product, and it doesn't make it feel as special when everybody just gets a consolation prize. But, boy, I go off quickly. So I'm enjoying where Daniel Bryan's character is going here. He's evolving nicely into this psychopath, and Rowan is a nice heavy for him to take the shots and do the dirty work. I like this pairing. Rowan's never been more relevant in his entire career. This is just a nice, I'm engaged in the story. There's a nice hook every week. And guess what? There's a big hook next week because fans are going to want to know, what is Daniel Bryan's, who is it, right? You were told at the very end of the show, I'm going to reveal who your mystery attacker is next week. That's compelling television. It's not difficult, folks. You just need a hook. When you do blow-offs every week and send people home with, quote, a smile on their face as if we're a circus or a charity every week, that is not compelling television. Because if you're fully satisfied and happy with the outcomes of every match and you know that's how they're going to end up, well, number one, that's predictable. And number two, it doesn't draw any emotion. There's no range of emotions when there's that kind of television that WWE produces that you just know at the end of the match, they're just going to send us home happy because, hey, we want to make sure the fans are sent home with a good feeling. And if, you know, that's the last thing they remember, then we want it to be a good thing. And we want to make sure that they go home with a smile. And that philosophy is, I think, in part, chewing away at the success of the overall WWE presentation. I understand it's literally in their mission statement that Stephanie McMahon said in a recent, I don't know, it was a Forbes magazine or something, don't quote me, but she said that, you know, we're still all about putting smiles on people's faces. It makes me want to vomit when I hear that. It makes me want to vomit. That can be like an internal goal, right? But I don't want to blatantly hear that that's what you are. That's not what WWE is. That's not what they should be doing. If it happens in a just organically, fine. But for a executive of a company to say that, why? It softens the product to a child level, as if we're just not, the audience is not capable of handling any emotion other than happiness or comedy, which is terrible in professional wrestling in most cases. It's like a message to everybody that, well, we want to make sure our fans are happy, and when we make sure that all the storylines and happy, and all the shows and happy, that the good guy wins, that puts a smile on their face, and then we have a happy customer base. That actually couldn't be further from the truth. Anger is a very good thing to make fans feel. That may sound counterproductive. Making your fans angry by having the heel go over time after time makes you want to, what? Purchase the network to see a pay-per-view in which the babyface gets his revenge or her revenge. Because it eventually will happen. I'm not opposed to the babyface ultimately overcoming. That's fine. But I don't need it happening on every show. And it, 9 times out of 10, does. Where Roman Reigns is the one standing tall at the end of Raw or SmackDown. I don't need that every time. But I don't also need the CEO, the CFO of the company coming out and saying that that's our mission. It makes me feel like I'm watching a Saturday morning cartoons. But I just wanted to tell you guys that. I mean, maybe you feel the same way, maybe you don't, maybe you're saying, oh my God, here he goes again. But I feel very strongly about that. Very strongly indeed, because it's backward psychology to think that the way that you get people invested and the way you're successful is to put smiles on faces. Well, here's how you put smiles on faces. Make them feel a range of emotions. It doesn't always have to just be the happiness. What about sad? What about angry? Those are emotions you can elicit. Those exist too. They're still there as part of the human psyche. But, okay, what do I know? Okay, well, moving on to some other things that happened on SmackDown Live. We also had The New Day versus The Revival and Randy Orton. It ended with the winners of The Revival and Randy Orton. And I think this was an overall good match. It reestablished The Revival because not only did they become Raw Tag Team Champions and were very quickly forgotten, but WWE gave them mic time, which I think was a positive thing. It gave them depth. They're not just solid throwback wrestlers to a time that's all but forgotten of tag team wrestling, but they can also talk. That's key. You have to have a voice. Otherwise, I'm sorry, they look like generic wrestler A and B. They look like they're from, you know, a time from yonder. I mean, without that microphone, they really don't have a whole lot. I'm sorry, at least to those who didn't watch NXT. So The Revival were somewhat revived. How about that for a transition? And Randy Orton went RKO crazy. And I loved it. Randy Orton RKO'd Kofi Kingston twice, Big E, and Xavier Woods. And looked dominant in doing it. I was fine with it. I'm tired of the New Day going over. And honestly, I mean, I actually said this 2-3 years ago. I'm ready for the New Day to break up. I'm ready for it to be over. Now, am I right in that? Do I think WWE is going to do that? I don't. I think the New Day may be a very rare group that doesn't break up in a predictable fashion, that most factions are created to just be destroyed and create single stars. That's the traditional view of creating factions, groups, and tag teams, is to just create individual stars so that when they break up, you have single stars that can be utilized. But the New Day could be the very rare stat. They could be the statistic of 1 in 1,000 of the groups that never break up. And that's understandable if WWE doesn't do that, because if I'm a business and a business does what? They try to make money. They're a for-profit organization, although you wouldn't know it according to Stephanie McMahon, who thinks they're a Little Sisters of the Poor, and they're just this charity that makes everybody smile every week. But they are a for-profit company, believe it or not, who care about their stats on Wall Street and to people they've never met to make sure that they're happy with how much money WWE's making. And the New Day is a very rare group that has sustained success for years. And the level of success they've achieved is not common for groups to not just be that successful, but for this long. So for that to happen and for you to break them up, you better really truly believe that you can create single stars out of those three. And right now, I don't know if they can. Plus the fact that, look at how much money New Day's bringing in. They are a financial success for WWE. They are cash cows. The amount of merchandise that these three are selling is probably in the top five. Not to my age group, that's certainly true, but to the younger audience, younger boys and girls who want to buy the rainbow colored wristbands and the unicorn horns and all the the booty-os and all that stuff, I'm sure it's very successful. So if you're a business guru and you're looking at the financial statements and you're saying, hey, they're bringing in a ton of revenue, if you turn them heel and break them up, that could affect the bottom line. So there's business in this. It's not just necessarily looking at it from a storyline booking perspective. This is money here. This one is a money decision. And if they're still bringing in strong merchandise sales, I probably wouldn't touch them either. As much as it would hurt me to say, if I'm a business and money's how I survive, I probably wouldn't break them up if they're financially successful. I wouldn't. Now, the other part of me, the booking part of me, says, my God, I've seen enough of them. I'm tired of the pancakes. I'm tired of Kofi being WWE champion and throwing pancakes around and not taking things seriously. And it's time for them to move on. I don't think it'll happen. But okay, so I enjoyed that. I have Randy Orton go RKO crazy. It was a nice touch and something we haven't seen in a while. So that was a very successful segment, I thought. Okay, now, a couple of weeks ago, I came on here with my co-host and Anthony DeMarco, and we talked about New Day, right? And we said that Kofi Kingston does not feel like a true WWE champion. Even if you are a Kofi supporter and you've been a Kofi supporter since day one, and he had this wonderful journey coming to the top and we could follow it and we could live through him vicariously and he is so relatable and he's so deserving, you cannot argue with me that WWE has not presented him as such. Other than getting just win after win after win after win, he's missing that intangible of feeling like a true WWE champion and not just a crowd-pleasing champion that the fans chose and it's a feel-good story and we'll let the fans have their fun until WrestleMania season rolls around and we crown our true champion who we believe should actually hold the belt, right? And that was part of our argument, but surprisingly, I haven't heard any negative feedback from you guys, which is amazing. I really believed that we were going to get scorched from the listeners, and I really got some positive feedback. And I figured we'd run into a ton of resistance from you guys of saying, what are you talking about? Kofi's the best WWE champion. He's so deserving. But I can't believe, maybe you guys agree, or maybe you just didn't get a chance to yell at us, but it was something that I was very passionate about, and I was kind of holding back because I know that we have a lot of Kofi fans out there. And look, I'm a Kofi fan. I think Kofi Kingston's in-ring work is commendable. He's the good soldier. He's been there 11 years. He's never got a WWE title shot, and he had to go through gauntlets and all that, and Vince McMahon inexplicably deciding to just put Kofi through hell. I don't understand that. That was never explained with the weeks leading up to WrestleMania. No explanation there. But I understand all that. The struggle. It's the struggle of the babyface to get to the top of the mountain. That's just a good story. And I agree that in chase mode, the babyface and heel dynamic tells a better story. That just is just booking 101. And I am in favor of that 100%, and I understand that. But I can't feel, I just can't force myself, and I'm trying to force myself to feel as if Kofi Kingston's a true, memorable WWE champion. And I've felt this way since day one. This isn't just because Kofi Kingston has won the championship and it's okay. We told the story and it's getting a little stale. I never felt truly engaged in the Kofi Kingston storyline. Other than the Elimination Chamber, which would have been a nice shock, of which it kind of felt, and maybe I answered my own question from the beginning of the show of when we had somebody have a breakout performance like that. Well, Kofi Kingston faced Daniel Bryan. Although the difference is Kofi Kingston's not a new call-up by any means. But maybe that's the last time I felt this way with Buddy Murphy and Roman Reigns. So there's my answer to my own question. But what I'm saying is that I shouldn't have to feel like I'm trying too hard to feel as if Kofi's a true WWE champion that I can get excited about. I'm just not excited about WWE as Kofi Kingston as WWE champion. I'm just not. And maybe I'm in the minority and I just didn't hear from the vocal fans who totally disagree with me and very probably aggressively disagree with me, and that's fine. That's what professional wrestling is all about, is agreements, disagreements, and everybody's got their own opinions, and that's totally fine. But I shouldn't have to try to force myself to feel a certain way about anybody in wrestling. You should just naturally feel about something, feel some way about somebody. And when you, it's like being in a relationship and trying to force yourself to fall in love with that person. Think about that. That's probably a good analogy. If you have to try to fall in love with somebody, it's not something that should be, you shouldn't try. It should just happen. It just happens naturally. And I just don't feel that way with Kofi Kingston. He feels like a feel-good, nice story that's a transitional champion. He doesn't feel like a real WWE champion. And don't give me the race thing. I don't need the race thing. That has zero to do with it here. Although in 2019, that's just how we point fingers at people when something we don't like happens, right? Yeah, you're racist, which is just a lazy argument. And there's no substance behind that. That has nothing to do with any of this. I don't care if the guy was green, purple, yellow, violet, aqua. I don't care. That has nothing to do with it. But inevitably, it will be brought up. So I just want to address it off the top. That has zero to do with it. I just don't feel excited about WWE choosing Kofi Kingston as champion. And you may say, well, the fans chose him. And they did. The fans did. I just personally am not excited when I see Kofi Kingston. Maybe it's because he's part of this group that is overshadowing and watering down what Kofi Kingston maybe could be as a solo act. Instead of just having him throw pancakes out of his belt like a child. And I understand, oh, well, that's what brought you to the dance. It's a different game when you become WWE champion. You want to legitimize yourself? Have a little bit of a change of character. Distance yourself from New Day. I don't even care if he turned heel. I don't know. Just something. But New Day is a group. What they stand for and what they represent and the terrible commentary that they did a few weeks ago that took away from what was going on inside the ring. They are a group that's a bunch of just inside joke, meta, let's make light of everything and again just tell each other inside jokes and it becomes a little childish. And when you need to tell a serious story, they are such a detractor from that. Everything with them is a joke, everything, and there are times for it, and they've made me laugh in the past. But when you're WWE champion, you can't be throwing pancakes around. I'm sorry. You just can't. And be taken seriously. And Kofi Kingston's been on this insane winning streak. And Randy Orton was supposed to be the guy that was going to legitimize and solidify Kofi Kingston's WWE championship run. And I'm sure he'll overcome that obstacle. I'm sure he will, because that's the story they're telling. That's fine. But I still won't believe it. I won't boo Kofi Kingston. I won't boo him. I don't dislike the character. I just don't like the character in this top spot. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't excite me. And the way he's presented on SmackDown, he feels like an afterthought. You don't get too many interviews from him. It's one segment. I know they're not trying to overexpose him, and I agree with not overexposing. But he doesn't add anything new to since he's become WWE champion. There's been no new anything. There's no evolution of his character. He's just kind of the same guy who's part of this inside joke group that throws pancakes around and, you know, makes references to pop culture to make sure they're relevant. And yeah, we know what's going on in the news. Let's make sure we, you know, tell some inside jokes and maybe the crowd gets it. Maybe they don't. There's just nothing there for me. It's very empty. That's probably a better feeling for me. It's, again, I'm not against it. I don't want boo Kofi Kingston. I just feel very empty with Kofi Kingston as WWE champion. That's probably the best way. I just feel very neutral. I'm just kind of like, eh. I don't feel one way or the other, and I should not feel that way when it comes to the top belt in the company. You can say, the Universal Championship. No, the WWE Championship is superior to the Universal Championship. Why, you may ask? Lineage. The Universal Championship is what, like 4 years old? 5 years old? Maybe not even that, but probably 4 years old, with Finn Balor being the inaugural champion. And yeah, we've had Brock Lesnar hold it for 70% of the time. Kevin Owens held it for a few months until Goldberg took it. Goldberg was champion for a little while. And then Roman Reigns had it. Seth Rollins has had it. And that's pretty much it. And I know that they're trying to keep it on top guys to add value to the belt. And I understand that. But when you're talking, comparing side by side, the WWE Championship is far superior in terms of value than the Universal Championship. So with Kofi Kingston as champion, I just don't feel it. I feel nothing. I look at him and I go, oh, that's right, Kofi Kingston's champion. And then I don't feel one way or the other. So I don't know what you guys are thinking, but tweet me at the WWE podcast. Let me know what you guys feel about this. It's a feel-good story. There's no doubt about it. It's the old school booking 101 of babyface, you know, scratching and clawing and doing everything he can to get to the top of the mountain. And I respect that. I understand. That's a great story. Daniel Bryan really blazed the path on that and broke the long standing mold of Vince McMahon and his groove of just anointing the big man as champion. He didn't look the part, but that's what ended up making him special to be the part. And I felt a lot with Daniel Bryan. I don't feel a lot with Kofi because I think a lot of it has to do with him being associated with New Day, and I just can't take him seriously. Everything's got to be a joke. I understand that, you know, Randy got his family involved, but then again, next week it's back to joking and laughing and making inside jokes on TV, and so they can be serious for, you know, a blink of an eye, and then they're right back to laughing and joking and playing around and doing their silly stuff. So I think that actually New Day, if I was going to, I guess, point to maybe what it is, it's partially New Day being associated with New Day is detracting from Kofi Kingston's legitimacy and getting any kind of feeling emotionally from me to care about his character. And we haven't seen that fire promo yet. That A-plus go-home promo. Admittedly, Roman Reigns hasn't ever given that in his entire career either. I can't remember the last time Roman Reigns even cut a B-plus promo. Roman's improved on the mic, don't get me wrong. But Roman Reigns has yet, in his 5-plus year tenure of being solo now, of giving me that A-plus, oh my God, I felt every word promo that got me just, oh, now I get it with Roman. He has not yet delivered that. But he survived and thrived because of his look and Vince McMahon's just obsession with how Roman looks and the look of the guys. Vince cannot and will not ever get over that, and that to him is the most important. Period. Let's be honest with each other. But Roman has survived because of that, and he's been anointed as the guy since he broke up from the Shield. That has been the anointing of Roman Reigns and the struggle and the struggle and the struggle to get him over. And Kofi, for 11 years, was defined as the mid-card guy. Just kind of there, puts on good matches. He's like Dolph Ziggler, which Ziggler drew a lot of good parallels that were true. Ziggler and Kofi had a lot of similarities in their career. He's just kind of the gatekeeper. He can work with anybody, but he's never going to be the guy. And all of a sudden he just gets this one opportunity, goes on like a, you know, a 30-0 winning streak and is WWE champion. So, all right. Well, I think I've said my piece on the Kofi Kingston as WWE champion deal here. But that's honestly how I feel. And I'd love to give you guys the honest opinion of how I feel, even though I may repeat myself and I know that's a flaw of mine. But and you know, hey, admittedly so. If you guys are going to listen to me, you don't want to hear the same thing over and over. But that's something I sometimes can't help. When I feel so passionate about something, I tend to repeat it maybe in slight variations. But that's just how my brain works. I'm not going to really apologize for that, but hey, I'm aware of it. It's a flaw. I get it. No problem. We all move on, right? So, well, that's my SmackDown Live review, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be back. It's going to be a few days because I got a lot of travel between now. I got to travel 2,300 miles back home. So tomorrow is a wasted day. I'll still be available on Twitter. Of course, I have my phone with me. So if you guys want to chat via Twitter, you can do that. You can email me at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to my website and check out all my shows, new articles being published multiple times a week, and support the show by clicking on the Amazon banner in the support the show tab, or go to patreon.com/wwepodcast if you want a completely ad-free listening experience. So you can go there and subscribe on CastBox if you guys have a moment. CastBox is like up and coming and they're getting super popular. And I really love their format too. So go to CastBox or Red Circle. Red Circle is the official home of the show. And it gets pushed out to all the other media podcast platforms. But that's really the home of the WWE podcast now is at Red Circle. So check me out there if you are so inclined. And really everywhere else, Spreaker and Spotify and TuneIn and wherever the heck else that you listen to radio or audio or anything. So thank you. But all right, guys, so this is goodbye for now, but I'll be back Sunday with either a wrestling nostalgia show or having a co-host come on the show and just BSing about what's going on in WWE. So it's one of the two. So buckle in. It's going to be a regularly scheduled programming starting again on Sunday, which I'm excited as we roll. I can't believe it. As we roll in the back half of summer here into the early fall, and we ramp ourselves up for the next pay-per-view, which is Clash of Champions. And then we, of course, get into the major pay-per-views at the end of the year. And bam, right into SummerSlam or right into WrestleMania season. It'll be here before you know it. So, one other thing, because I did not mention it, is Stone Cold on Raw last night. I can't believe I missed this on my review show. Him endorsing Seth Rollins, I think, was good. And having Stone Cold on like Skype or whatever they were able to connect it from his home, and it was live, he hit on everything that I had hit on. So, Austin, I think you're stealing from my show. But of him talking about how Seth Rollins identified himself of who and what Seth freaking Rollins is, and that everything he is and everything he does and he lives and breathes is wrestling. Yay. So that I totally agreed. That's what made his promo effective a couple of weeks ago after getting beat a second time by Lesnar, was Seth Rollins identifying that this is who and what he is. This is his identity. This is all he has, is being here. It doesn't matter how many times he gets his ass whipped. He is here every week because this is everything he is, everything he does, and who he is. Totally agree with Austin. So Austin, you know, hey, I take royalties and I accept cash check money orders, right? So I'm sure he does not listen to the show, but it was just, I was just, you know, sitting there nodding along with Austin, like, yes, yes, yes. Like, that's exactly what I loved about that promo, too. So, all right, everybody. Well, thank you again so much for joining me, and I'll be back Sunday and then back all next week with all your normal scheduled programming. So, thanks again, and until then, I'll talk to you next time.